This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 61. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what our title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books, and I mean everything. We cover grimdark fantasy, epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, urban fantasy with paranormal romance episode things going on in it. I don't care. You can find the best and brightest authors in the fantasy world all here at the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Plus, we also have some other special guests we bring in to join the show along the way. So there's lots to come and get here on the show. For my update this week, I'm working on a new book for authors that walks them through the challenging process of getting their books into audiobook formats. I hope to have that finished and published before a big conference I have coming up in November. I'm also plotting out the story right now for book 8 in my supernatural paramedic series, Extreme Medical Services. If that sounds interesting to you, you might want to check out book 1. It's titled Extreme Medical Services, and it's free right now on all the ebook stores. So if you want to download a free copy of it, you can go out to wherever you buy your ebooks and download it now. That's Extreme Medical Services. Check it out. I'll be working on book 8 to probably bring out sometime in early 2020. As always, if you're interested in more information on what I'm up to and on my books and other things, you can check out and join my fan group on Facebook. That's Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. We talk about all sorts of things to do with fantasy and books, not just my books, but all sorts of other things. And you can also check out my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you on either of those locations, so take a time and reach out to me if you have any questions or comment about something you've read. I'd love to hear from you. Now let's go ahead and get into our author interview for this episode. The Wall Street Journal best-selling author Jeff Wheeler is on the show, and he took an early retirement from his career at Intel in 2014 to become a full-time writer. He's a husband, a father of five, and a devout member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Jeff lives and writes with his family somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. Check out my interview with Jeff, where we talk about his Grave Kingdom series, which is a great fun read, and you'll find out more about what Jeff and I talk about. Check out this episode coming right up. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Jamie. It's great to be here.
I'm sure there are quite a few people that know who you are, but there are always a few who don't. And so why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity of being here today. So writing is something that I've always wanted to do my whole life, and I'm one of those success stories that took 21 years to happen. I spent 21 years working at Intel in the Bay Area and in California, finally got a publishing contract a couple, about 7-8 years ago, and have been writing full time since 2014. So living the dream, but it took a long time coming, but I've got 25 books selling right now and another series coming out next year.
So you said you were writing, or you always wanted to be a writer. Were you writing while you were working at Intel? Were you kind of honing your craft, or was this something you kind of put on the back burner and didn't really jump into it until later in life?
Well, for me, I found ways to squeeze it into all the little nooks and corners in my life. So I wrote novels while I was in high school. I wrote novels while I was in college, even though, creative writing wasn't a major. And I wrote while I was at Intel. I would kind of carve off maybe some time over the weekend or even one night a week. I would squeeze in to be able to write a chapter. And so it's something that it took years honing the craft and a lot of practice. I had to throw away a lot of stuff before things worked out. But definitely, it's something that I could never see myself not writing. It was always something that was burning inside of me, that an idea or a story, something that I needed to work on.
Was it always epic fantasy for you, or were there other genres you kind of dabbled in over the time?
When I started, it was more thrillers and historical novels, but it wasn't until I was in college that I decided fantasy was what I wanted to do, and mostly because of Terry Brooks. He was my favorite author throughout high school and in my earlier days, and that kind of storytelling. I love that with fantasy that you're not constrained by what really happened. You're not constrained even by the physics of the natural world. There's other things you can do to create magic systems and things to work out. So I finally shifted, 100% to fantasy, but I've got a lot of other kinds of novels that were part of those practice rounds that I did beforehand.
Yeah. Terry Brooks is an influence on so many of us. And one of the things that I liked so much about his work was the hint of the modern world in the background of his early stories, that you kind of knew this was post-apocalyptic, even though it was really a fantasy story. So it was kind of a little bit of other things mixed in there, which always really intrigued me. And so when he brought his later books out and kind of connected it all together, it really came full circle for me.
It did. And I like how he did that as well. I know Tolkien was writing his Middle Earth based on, what he thought an epic would be before, to kind of set up English history. Well, Brooks was post-apocalyptic. What's going to happen? What happens if society collapses and magic and radiation and everything shifts and transforms the world? So yeah, I get you. And it was kind of the future, but it was a future that was so different than what we would expect or what we've seen in some other books like Hunger Games or things like that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I especially liked how he worked in the concept of the elves as always being there. They had always been, the fairy had always been in the background. And I think that's probably one of the things that pushed me into being intrigued by urban fantasy myself, and ended up being my primary niche. So, it's his good stuff. That's definitely interesting there. I know you've got so many books out, and that's just a fantastic thing. I tend to be prolific as a writer myself, but you really kind of kicked it off with the King Fountain series, correct?
That was the one that kind of changed the size of my audience. The book, my Muirwood series, is what put me on the map.
Right.
And I was afraid for a time that nothing I would write would meet or match what that did. And then King Fountain came, and it was different. And, it was different. I had a protagonist who was 8 years old, and it just stood different in so many different ways. And it literally is what brought so many of my audience to me and have been following me and reading some of the other previous novels as well. So I definitely have a great softness in my heart for King Fountain and the characters that were in that series.
Yeah, and writing as such a young protagonist has got its own challenges, because how do you make them relevant to an adult world in which they live, correct?
It's true, but I'm a father of five kids, and just watching and observing my own children, the things they do are funny, interesting. They're scared of things. They have passions about things, and so I had a lot of inspiration just around me as I was writing that series. I actually modeled that protagonist over my youngest son and some of his quirks and some of his fears, and just imagining what would happen if he was sent to an evil king as a hostage and felt every day that his life was in danger. How would my son react to those things? So I definitely had some ways of grounding myself, but I looked at other classic pieces of fiction and film to see whether it could be pulled off, like M. Night Shyamalan's The Sixth Sense. One of the main characters there is an 8-year-old boy, and Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, his main character Pip starts off as an 8-year-old. And so I thought, well, if they can pull it off, then I think audiences will believe it if they feel it's authentic, and as if they're reacting, the characters reacting in a way that you would believe an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old would react to.
It's really important, I think, to bring in as much realism to a fantasy world as possible, because that allows people to to suspend the disbelief when you add the magical and fantastical elements to it.
Oh, definitely agree with you there. And I look at it also, it's not just, you know, realism, but it's the emotions that you're tapping into. Like, people care about their kids, and, you know, the thought of, oh no, my kid is a hostage, that causes a visceral reaction to people. And so there's different ways you can connect to your readers, but I find thinking of the kind of emotions that I want to tap into through the storytelling that I do, that's a really powerful way. And again, the more realistic it is, or the more the reader can relate to what's going on, the more invested they're going to be in it.
Now, I noticed in the Harbinger series and in the upcoming Grave Kingdom series, you have female protagonists. Have you had trouble as I mean, obviously you have kids. I'm assuming you have daughters as well as sons. So I do as well. And I have to really channel my daughters when I'm writing female characters. Do you have to do the same thing, as really refer back to the strong women in your life?
Absolutely. And, you know, the Muirwood series, which is the one that I did, that first led off with a very strong female protagonist, I actually used my niece, my brother's oldest daughter, and I let her read the chapters as I was writing them, just to make sure that the reactions were resonating the right way. And when she would laugh and write back and say, "Yeah, this is realistic," it gave me a sense that I was hitting those right notes. But of course, you know, my wife is somebody who reads all my works and gives me, you know, very thoughtful and helpful suggestions. My oldest daughter is also one of my first readers who looks at all of my inputs and makes sure that I'm hitting those right notes. But I think I don't think that it's impossible for a man to write a woman's point of view, or for a woman to write a man's point of view. It really is a matter of how well you know these characters and how real they are, and they're not just, you know, cardboard cutouts or stereotypes. That they're nestled in original people that could be alive and feel like they could be alive.
Yeah. And, you know, I was a stay at home dad from when my kids were really young, and all three of them, and the two girls that I have, you know, raising them through the teenage years really helped me dig into that angst.
Oh yeah. I've got a house of teenagers right now, so I know what you're saying.
And I love that your wife is your first reader. And, you know, mine, I don't know what I'd do without my wife's input into the stuff. She gets most every book I write, at some point before it goes out to anyone else, because I need her input. I think we're a team in that way. And it's interesting to hear you seem like you do the same thing.
Absolutely. And my sister, my youngest sister, is also one of my first readers. So, she and my daughter read every week as I, you know, produce new material. My wife likes to wait till the end, because she, you know, it's hard for her to read every three chapters once a week. But she's one of the first people before it goes out to my other group of, you know, loyal first readers, you know, after that. But all of their opinions are so helpful to me. Some is more real time. I get a sense for how a reader is reading each chapter. But then my wife gives me more holistic guidelines. And like you, it's so helpful that I can't imagine not doing it that way.
And I like, you know, so this is something that I think a lot of writers listen to this show as well as readers. And it's important, I think, for anyone just getting started to cultivate those early readers, because their input can be so invaluable. And it sounds like you utilize it, like so many other successful authors I know, to really bounce and get feedback from them on characters, on the story, on plot holes, on all those things that you as the author write so many things, and some of it never comes out of your head, even though you thought you put it down.
It's true. And for me, I really want to make sure that I don't telegraph too much where my twists are, because my books are full of twists and turns. And I like to be able to surprise my readers without them knowing what's going to come. And so it's that early feedback that I get ongoing that tells me, because I always ask them, what do you think is going to happen next? And just asking that question, even before I've written the next batch of chapters, and getting an answer to that question shows me that, have I been deceiving them properly, right? Am I leading them the way I want them to think, so that when I throw in the twist later on that they don't see it coming? And even though my sister read all my works, I still managed to surprise her because she knows how devious my mind can be.
You'd think growing up with you all those years, she'd have figured it out by now.
You'd think that, wouldn't you? But I like to be unpredictable.
It sounds like you do a good bit of planning on your books ahead of time. How much plotting goes into your writing versus that serendipitous discovery that happens sometimes when you're writing?
You know, that's a really good question. And I like to develop my series. I look at it holistically at the beginning, in kind of like, you know, the beginning, the middle, and the end. Like, you know, I know where things are going to end up. I kind of know where I'm going to meet halfway, and I know where it's going to begin. But other than that, other than some general scaffolding, I leave the rest of the narrative to kind of develop as it goes, which means I get a lot of surprises along the way. Sometimes I put myself in places where I have to struggle to get myself out of, but I've never ended up painting myself into a corner where I can't get out of. And I really think that having the mix of both, you know, pacing and plotting it all from the beginning versus the creativity and discovery that happens is an important thing to balance, because, you know, I need to feel that sense of newness and discovery. And certainly I've had situations where my characters have chosen to do things that I didn't foresee or expect or even want them to do, that they're almost like they're living people. And they're like, no, I'm going to do this. And I'm like, wait, no, I'm the author. I'm the one who tells you what to do. But like, no, I'm going to go do this. And so I have found the characters often move the story in directions that surprise me. But it all works out wonderfully together.
And you know, I'm a person who firmly believes that you can't paint yourself into a corner, because the character has to find a way out. It may not be an elegant solution, but they'll find a way out, because there are ways out. Even if it's a very grim opportunity to escape or get out of the situation. That's part of the process, at least for me, is and often that's where my plot twists come in, is when I get in those situations and my creative brain has to say, well, all right, you've learned this much about the character. What would they do in this situation? And in those moments are when I surprise myself, because the character does find a solution. And those are the things that then I have to go back and put the little foreshadowing segments in to, you know, give the reader that aha moment at the end where they go, you know what, that's why that happened. And, you know, those kind of things.
I can't agree more, Jamie. And those are those delightful moments to me that happen as a writer. I really look at it as how can I make hard things happen to my characters? I mean, I really pull out all the stops. How can I make hard things happen to them to see how they react? Because it's their reactions that help define them. But then I don't shy away from making really difficult situations come up in their lives. And sometimes, you know, my readers and reviews will be like, goodness, Jeff's just, you know, so mean to his characters. But it's that meanness that really helps that development come out. And you're right, there's always been an answer. There's always been a solution to the problem. I've never run into a situation where they couldn't figure out how to get out of it. And it wasn't always perfect, but it was real and it resonated.
Well, it's that imperfection that lends to the reality of it, right? I mean, lends to a real person or a real character's solution, because seldom do we come up with the perfect answer to anything in our lives.
So true. I can't agree with you more.
So one of the things that I found is that those difficult moments in the books are also the catalysts for getting my readers to reach out to me and communicate. It's that moment of where they just feel like they have to tell me what their reaction was. Do you find that as well?
Absolutely. And sometimes they'll reach out through Goodreads or Facebook or even an email. And I love especially the ones that are sending the message right after they finish reading, because it's still fresh in their minds and the emotions are still very tangible. And so sometimes they're really mad at me, but most of the time I hear from them when they're done with the series, when they've gone through all the suffering and they see the payoff at the end. And to me, it's one of the nicest things about being an author is just being able to have that feedback, that dialogue back of, hey, you touched me, you impacted my life. I've had lots of just neat messages from fans, and I just appreciate it so much. I think we all do. And so it's not just the lonely author sitting in the cave, but because of technology today, we have that ability to communicate. And I try to make myself very available to my readers, because I know when I was younger, I used to write Terry Brooks letters, and he had the courtesy to write me back. And I always appreciated that. But now it's so much easier to do that. You can send a note or make a post. And I do try to respond rather quickly, as often as I can, to what the readers are telling me.
You mentioned Facebook, and I know you left your Twitter handle here as well. What is your preferred method of reaching out to them? Is it email or having someone get in touch with you? Do you go to conventions, for instance, where you actually run into people face to face on occasion?
I go to a couple. I usually go to Emerald City in Seattle. I go to New York Comic Con pretty regularly, but I don't travel all that much. So I don't really have a preference. I just let all those methods become available so that whatever the fan wants to do to reach out, they can. I just don't publish my phone number because that's kind of awkward.
I completely understand that, but it's different in this, the short interactions you get on Twitter, the longer posts and interactions, you know, comments, threads that you get on Facebook. And then that rare gem of that person who works up the courage to come up and talk to you. And I urge people, and I say this all the time, don't be afraid of your favorite authors. We're just people, and we love talking about stories, our stories, other people's stories, your stories. So please come up and meet us.
I agree. And I love meeting people, and it's one of the fun things when you get to see somebody that you influenced and you affected in some positive way. So it's only a good thing. It's very rarely has it been an awkward encounter.
Now, you wanted to talk a little bit more in depth about The Killing Fog, which is the first book in the Grave Kingdom book. That's up for pre-order right now, not coming out until March. But it is available out there for pre-order for those that want to get ready for it. Tell us a little bit about how this story came about.
Thank you. I'm excited about this one because, we just finished the Harbinger series. The last book is out. So fans are reading that right now. And I haven't been interviewed about this new series yet. So this is the first opportunity I've gotten to really talk about it, other than through just my author website and things. One of the things that was important to me when I first became a writer is I didn't want to feel trapped to only write in one world or one setting or using one magic system. And so I've consciously and deliberately kind of expanded. I've got, several different worlds that I've done. And in Harbinger, I kind of wove them together. And so I need, after Harbinger, where I've literally fused together like three of my worlds, I wanted a break. I wanted something that was different, something that was unique. And so this Grave Kingdom series is kind of a mashup of two experiences that I've had. One was a trip to Alaska and just the stunning geography up there, and these glaciers and waterfalls and whales and all it just this rugged terrain that where the sun is up during the summer and it's down during the winters, and the seasons make the living conditions very, very different. Then I also had an experience last year of being invited to go to China. And so this Grave Kingdom series is kind of a mashup of both of these experiences, where it's kind of a Lord of the Rings feeling based on ancient Chinese history, which there's still not a lot of knowledge about. They only uncovered the Terracotta Warriors back in the 70s. So there's still a lot of things we don't know about how some of these palaces were built or where some of their mythology comes from. And so I really was inspired by both of these trips to kind of take Chinese culture and put it into a setting that's more reminiscent of Alaska and kind of merge that together. And the plot idea came on one of the visits we had to one of the glaciers in Alaska. And that just the whole plot just came to me in one of those freakish moments of inspiration that I thought, wow, that would be such a fun, exciting story to tell. And then when I went to China, it gave me the vehicle to be able to tell that story. So it's really very different than the other books that I've written, which have been more either medieval European history or, maybe early modern European history. This is something that's just a totally different culture, different set of magic, and different sets of characters with their own unique culture. And I'm so excited to be able to share it with my fans next year when it comes out.
And Bing Mai is the main character, another strong female lead, belongs to a band of mercenaries, survivor of a combat school. Sounds like a great, strong female character to me.
It is. And when I was in China, I actually met a girl who worked for my publisher, that's her name. And she told me the story of how she got her name. And I said, I'm going to have to put you in my book because it was just so fun. So one of the things I've loved doing is weaving real people, the people that I've met. It's obviously not the same. I borrowed her name, but just a lot of the neat experiences that I had with my family out in China last year kind of diffused into this series. And I watched a lot of martial arts movies and rewatched some things, read some literature based on Wuxia novels and things that, are very popular over there. And just to kind of help immerse my brain in the kind of things that that they like over there. And I really think it's going to be accessible to people all over the world. It's such a fascinating culture that I think there's just so much to say about it.
I know we're running out of time, but I'm fascinated with this because, like you said, there's so much about Chinese mythology that is just a mystery to people, in especially in the Western world. And there's so many aspects of their culture that comes from a different philosophical direction. Did that affect how you created the magic system for this world and some of those aspects?
Absolutely. And some of the tours that we had of like the Forbidden City and some of the different palaces and the Great Wall, as we would talk to locals, as we talk and hear some of their stories about it, I kept thinking, this is magic. I mean, they believe in magic. And I just thought, well, there needs to be an origin story for it. So absolutely, some of the philosophical underpinnings were part of my thinking. But I also wanted to come up with explanations for how it came to be. It's like, yeah, they believe this, they think this, but what were some of the origins of where some of those thoughts might have come from? And for me, one of the things, the reason I called the series the Grave Kingdom series is, in a lot of the worlds that I've created, I've never really gone into an explanation of the afterlife and what happens there. And the Chinese philosophy about the afterlife is very interesting. And so it gives me a chance to explore a new world, the world after death, which I've called the Grave Kingdom. So there are just some really fascinating things that I'm just excited to be able to explore. And I'm writing the third book right now. And I can't wait to be able to get everybody to where I am right now.
Now, it looks like you get when you get a series like this rolling, you tend to put the books out pretty rapid progression. Not as fast as some, but definitely the books roll out fast enough to keep the readers happy, I would think.
Definitely. I think a lot of readers appreciate not having to wait years and years in between books. I write about 3 or 4 books a year. And so, and I'm grateful to have a publisher, 47 North, that can keep up with that pace. And so even though I write them quickly, we have to be able to put them in the production schedule and stuff so that when the book comes out, a reader knows that the next one's coming out a couple of months later. And that way there's not a huge agonizing wait in between the whole series coming out. So all three books will be published next year.
Awesome. So The Killing Fog is book one. You can find it over on Amazon. It's available for pre-order now. I would urge you to just be ready, folks. It sounds like a fascinating read. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on the show. Where can people find you online if they want to reach out to you, as we talked about earlier?
My website is www.jeff-wheeler.com, and that has my contact information there, and I love hearing from fans. So thank you, Jamie, for inviting me today.
And I'll tell you what, when Killing Fog comes out and you're ready to talk about getting book two out there, please reach out to me. I'd love to have you back on, especially after I've had a chance to dig into it, and we can talk a little bit about what's coming up in book two.
Sounds good. Thank you.
That will wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us online for a whole lot more from the fantasy-focused community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also on the website, over at fantasy-focus.com, if you want to, you can subscribe to the show. Make sure you don't miss any of the episodes, and you'll find subscription links on every podcast episode post there. Just look at those links right below the player, and you can sign up for your favorite mobile app via iOS or Android. There are links to subscribe via apps like Stitcher or TuneIn, and you can even get an email notification if that's what you want to subscribe by. But make sure you head over and subscribe, because you don't want to miss any of the upcoming episodes. We've got some amazing authors already scheduled, and our next one is author and publisher Josiah Bancroft on the next episode, so you won't want to miss that one. We had a great time chatting about books and writing and fantasy in general, so check it out. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook. There's two places you can follow me there, at Jamie Davis Books, which is my author page. And then I have a fan group over there where we talk about all sorts of fantasy book stuff, not just my books, but maybe other books you've read. And we share it with amongst each other and share what we're reading at any given time. And you can find that at Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. So check that out. Also, you can find me on my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where if you want, you can get a free book. Just sign up for my newsletter and you get a free book to check out if you like my reading and writing or not. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here for our next podcast. And don't forget to do what I always tell you to do at the end of every episode. Make sure you keep your eyes open, folks, because you may not know it, but there's magic all around you.